much do you think about pulling a trigger before you post something online? I know there is a ton of stuff that I wish I'd thought about more. There are blog posts, there's photos of my kids and just dumb stuff, a whole library of my own personal embarrassing digital history floating around out there. So when we post photos of our kids, we're writing the first chapters of their digital history. And there's a lot riding on getting it right. And that line of what's appropriate and what's not is shifting. Even people who had strict rules around what they would or wouldn't post about their kids are now saying they wish they'd never shared anything at all. These days, it's not just people with big followings who need to watch out for unintended consequences once an image is online. And I would love to hear from you on this. Do you share your kids in the same way now than you did when they were really little? Or if you have a few kids, how's your thinking on this changed? Do you regret sharing things online? Have you had a digital about face, and how did it go? With me is Roisin Tarrant, a content creator. She makes videos about her life as a mum of three with over 300,000 followers across TikTok and Instagram. Roisin, you make parenting and mum content. Tell me about the rules you originally set for yourself about sharing photos of your son.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I actually started my account as a renovation account. So this was well before I had children, and so it wasn't really on my mind. Then I had listened to a few podcasts here and there about how people share their kids online. And when he was born, because my account was really about my home, he wasn't really centered in it. And then I kind of realized, gosh, I really like this mum stuff. And so I started to share a little bit more about my mum journey. And I never centered him in my content, but I didn't blur his face out. Then when he was about 6 months old, I thought, okay, he's starting to become more recognizable. And so I kind of just cut him out of my content completely. And then if he was around, I would blur his face. And then I got pregnant with twins and decided, cool, I'm just going to replicate exactly what I had done last time. So when they were babies, they were around and all of that kind of thing. Then they turned 6 months and I thought, that's the end of that. But yeah, I've definitely changed my tune on that a little bit.
So twin content goes off on social media.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. And that was probably the catalyst for me to change my mind, because I was sharing this content that, you know, it's objectively cute. And I think 99.9% of the people consuming it had great intentions and just thought cute babies. But the 1% was too much for me.
So this is people sharing your content on their own platforms. Is that what you mean?
No, liking, saving, just viewing in general, you know, millions and millions of views. That's too many people seeing my kids, in my opinion.
What was there a particular moment that stuck out for you where you kind of realized you'd lost control of those images?
I think I looked at the analytics of the post and I saw one of them had something like 4,500 saves. And I thought, yuck. I just don't like that. And I just realized there's no reason for anyone to be saving that video of my kids. And that was my fault that I put that out into the universe to be saved.
Is that, like, had the horse bolted? Have you gone back and pulled those things down?
I have pulled down so much stuff, and I still to this day, you know, I'll get memories of a year ago today or 2 years ago you posted this, and I'm archiving stuff every day. And it's interesting because, like I said, I never featured my kids prominently in my content, and I will still find things where, you know, they'll be in the background of something and I'm having to pull stuff down all the time.
So as part of this sort of awakening process, you are a social media person, you made a video about it.
Yeah.
And you kind of talked to your followers about saying you'd made a mistake. Why did you address it in such a public way?
I think because I get a lot of questions about why I don't show my kids. I predominantly just don't film them, but on the rare occasion that they might be in the background, I will blow their faces out. So I do go to quite an extent not to have them seen. And every time a video goes up where they are blurred out, I get a lot of backlash of people saying, like, why do you blow your kids out? It's not that big of a deal. Do you think you're a celebrity? And
you're like, why do you care so much about my kid?
Yeah, and I think that that kind of rhetoric kind of just reinforces my beliefs on this topic. But also I think it's just, I wish I had have seen more videos like this as I was growing my following, because it just wasn't the discussion. And I just thought, that's a problem for really big influencers. It's not a problem for me. You know, I just had 5,000 followers at the time or something like that. And the way that the algorithms work now is you could have 300 followers, but if you have a public account, especially on TikTok, that algorithm is crazy. You know, you had 10 million people watching a video. So I think it's just you can lose control of your own content very quickly.
You are listening to Life Matters here on Radio National. I'm Tegan Taylor, and we're talking about when you're sharing your life online, what happens when you want to change your mind and pull some of that back, especially if you have kids. If this is something that you've thought about or changed your mind on, how much you share about your family members, I'd really love to know what went into making that decision. I'm also joined by Nick Carra, who's the director of the Centre for Digital Cultures and Societies at the University of Queensland. Nick, what do you think about Roisin's story? Is this sort of regret common?
Yeah, I think it's totally common. And I think it, like, I guess what I'm thinking about is it's the millennials having children, right? It's like the it's the generation that was the first generation to grow up on the internet. And the millennials were kind of messy on the internet, you know, in our teens and 20s. And so now we're having kids and we have this kind of lived experience of it. And we're like, oh, wait a second. Because we're thinking about it often in terms of our own lives. Like a lot of us are digging back deep into our, you know, Facebook or, do you know, I remember once going and hunting for my old MySpace profile to make sure that it had absolutely been deleted.
your top eight friends.
Yeah.
You got to update that.
You know, my photo bucket and whatever, you know. So you sort of have this own experience of it and now you have kids. And so you kind of really then start to contemplate all of that with your kids from an early age.
I definitely know in myself, my own life and the people who I speak to, there's this sort of resounding relief that we didn't have social media when we were kids and when we were even young adults for a lot of us. And what we're realising is that our kids sort of never got to opt out of this.
Right. But I also think like maybe kids growing up now, like you know, we know, like, I don't know, Gen Z, they're probably way more careful than the millennials were. And so they're probably going to have less to go back and delete, because they've grown up in a world that's also told them you'll be super visible on the internet for a very long time, be very, very careful. Whereas the millennials, when social media blew up in the mid-noughties through to the mid-20s, they weren't hearing that message. They were just, they never thought like the future would show up on the internet or their parents would show up on the internet or anything like that.
It did feel like a closed space and there was a safety in that, but we're realising that it's really permanent and really enduring. I'm really keen to know if you've set rules around how you share your kids on social media, have you had to tell friends and grandparents about those rules as well? And how have you communicated that to them? One text says, I haven't posted pictures of my daughter's face on social media since she was born a year ago. This choice was made because I try to remain cognizant of her humanity above all else and to be mindful that she's a person first and always, rather than a source of entertainment or content. I know that for me personally, that would be a slippery slope of posting things that were cute and funny at the time or according to my judgment in the moment, but which might end up compromising my sense of integrity around holding her best interests at heart and being sensitive to and protecting her little human self. Such a thoughtful text, Roisin. What the early rules that you had around when babies are really small, They're very unique, but they're also, in a sense, a little baby and not themselves.
Yeah.
That was part of your original reasoning.
Totally. That was so much of where I came from, is I thought no one's going to recognise my 3-year-old if they see a photo of him as a newborn. And I do still stand by that decision, that nobody out in the wild would recognise my children from social media. And that was a really, really big thing for me. I think I had an instance where we put him in a daycare and someone sent me a message and said, oh, has your son just started at X daycare?
Oh,
I think he started in the same room as my child. And I just had this sinking feeling of, if I hadn't have shared his name on social media, that connection would never have been made. So that's kind of why I like to share these things, because I thought I was doing the right thing. And there is still so many things I would go back and do differently. I wish I had have given my kids pseudonyms. Like, I wish I hadn't have put their legal names on the internet. And if you follow me now, you'll never hear me saying their names anymore. So it's been, you know, probably 8 months since I've said their names online, but they're out there now. If someone really wants to know, they'll find out. So I think that, and when I posted my video talking about all my reasons behind not sharing my kids, one of the biggest bits of feedback I got was, how do I talk to grandparents about my decision of sharing kids online? Because nobody, oh, I'm not going to say nobody, but most people don't share with any ill intent. They share because these little people are beautiful and the lights of our lives, and we're so proud of them. And I think it can be really hard to talk to people. I definitely have gotten a lot of people that just say, you're so over the top, you're overreacting, it's not that big of a deal. So I think respecting those decisions that parents make for their own kids is really important as well.
How did you have those conversations with your loved ones?
Well, we're very lucky because we have a public profile that I'm very open about not sharing my kids. I feel like it just kind of trickled down that, oh, you know, Roshan and Zach don't want their kids on the internet. And I think especially because we do have a public profile, something that I've noticed is when you intentionally keep something private, it makes it more enticing for people to seek out. So when, you know, you try to keep your children off the internet, people will try and find ways to find photos of them, which is very scary. And once again, reiterates the point of why I've made the decision that I've made.
Nick, what might be going on there, do you think?
Like, I think some of it, you know, before you leap to the small percentage of people who probably have very creepy reasons, you know what I mean? A lot of it's just the weird parasocial ambience of digital life. Like, we just sort of know a lot about strangers and sometimes know a lot about our colleagues and friends' lives that we only know because of this flow of stuff that's going through social media. And so I think some of it would be people hunting around, but some of it would be just they've kind of picked up all of these little details about the rhythm of your week and, you know, yeah, who your kids' names are.
Totally.
And, you know, where you drop them off and all of that kind of stuff. And then they just kind of bring it up in conversation and we're like, whoa, wait a second. Like this kind of collision between the ambient background of our digital worlds and our actual lived experiences kind of freaks us out sometimes.
Yeah. The other thing I wanted to bring up was this idea of TikTok as one platform and the fact that the early social media sites were very much about a closed group with people that you knew in real life. And we shared things subconsciously, kind of knowing that those were the rules there. We're hearing Roshan talking about TikTok stuff going crazy. How is, there's probably a lot of people who are like, no thanks, don't want to be on TikTok. But the truth is that the way that it works is filtering through to other social sites.
That's right. So Instagram, you know, starts off as a sort of social networking site. So the whole idea is you're following and following if others are following you and you kind of know them and you kind of know who your followers are. And then as you build up that audience, it's like you're making the choice to build a bigger audience and you're kind of aware of it. Whereas TikTok sort of looks like that, but it's not like that. It's an entertainment economy kind of platform. And so it's not about who follows who and who knows who. It's about finding content and it's very content hungry to keep feeding into the For You page feed. And so it's going to find all of these people who have very low followers and put their video and expose it to like enormous audiences all of a sudden. And so I think a lot of people who kind of blow up on TikTok are unprepared for the visibility of being a creator.
On the text line, Bill says social media exists for one reason, the company's profit. So Nick, how is what we share online dictated by the companies that run these platforms?
So these platforms basically are extremely content hungry. They want, you know, to make a profit, they have to keep you in the feed scrolling for as long as possible because it's your attention that is the product that they can sell to advertisers. And to keep you scrolling, they need more content and they want to get that content as cheaply as possible. They don't want to pay for it. And so TikTok has really changed the game here because it's massively diffused or distributed who the creators are of content. And so it's created an extraordinary number of people who are creating volumes of content to smaller audiences that then are getting fed into the For You page and blowing up. Whereas something like Instagram had a sort of smaller number of very high profile influencers who are producing content. And so it's like drawing a lot of us into this creator economy, these kind of forms of visibility that's new. And so TikTok has really dramatically changed the whole landscape because now Instagram wants to operate like that. YouTube wants to operate like that. And so all of a sudden, you know, you have many more people who are kind of finding themselves either by design or by accident a creator on these platforms.
So Roshan, you were never profiting off your kids directly. They weren't part of brand collaborations. You weren't sort of a mum influencer. Mm. You were a renovator. Mm-hmm. How have you pulled away the part of TikTok that you could monetize, if any, from your family now that this has shifted for you?
Yeah, I definitely would call myself a mum content creator, but I share my motherhood and not my children. So I share my experience as a woman with three young kids. I am a career woman. I'm a creative. And that to me is very separate to my children. You know, I might share the things like how I get everyone's lunchboxes prepped in the day or my breastfeeding journey with twins or my fertility journey, and all of those things are my stories to tell. They are, you know, that's my prerogative to put that information online, and I have complete control of how because I am the creator and I produce the content, I have complete control of the message that I put out there. I don't have control once it's out there of the response. And I think that's probably the biggest learning for me is I put a video up once where I was talking about my two little girls and I mentioned their names in the video and it went completely viral and people started commenting on their names, you know, really derogatory comments about what I had called my kids. And I thought, like, they just don't need to see that kind of content on the internet when they grow up. They don't need to see people making that kind of comments about them. And I think people really dehumanize creators that they see through algorithms, you know, on the For You page and even on Instagram. They don't think, oh, this is just a suburban mum with three kids, like going to work, doing her best. They think, you know, this is just entertainment for me and I'm going to say whatever first thing comes out of my head.
Nick, whenever we have conversations like this, I always think, we're human brains. Are human brains incompatible with the size of the audience that we can reach on social media?
Or like the experience you're describing, are our brains kind of incompatible with the forms of sociality where we're encountering these very intimate stories from ordinary people who are sharing these stories about their lives? And in one way, the kind of stories you tell, Roisin, are really kind of important to other mums like you who want to, you know, there's something very important there. But in another way, they're kind of being exposed to this huge audience of strangers who can then just kind of intervene in your life in really intimate and upsetting kinds of ways. And like on both sides of that, both the creator side and the audience side, we're not prepared for it. And these platforms are kind of tuned to exploit our limbic system, you know, not our kind of, you know, that kind of instinctive part of our brain, not the reflective caring part of our brain sometimes.
Roisin, so your kids are still little, they're little kids. These probably aren't big conversations you're having yet, but when they're old enough to understand the sort of process and the decision-making that you've gone through, what do you hope they learn from your example?
I hope they learn that I just put them first, that they were my number one priority and that I was never putting, you know, I believe that no one has the right to earn money through social media. I have another job. I have another career. I don't rely on this as my way to support my family. And that I would have, you know, I will go and work at Coles. I will go and do anything that I need to do if it means keeping them safe.
Thanks to you both for sharing your experience and insights today. Roisin Tarrant is a content creator. She makes videos about her life as a mum of three on TikTok and Instagram. You can look up G Bungalow Roisin if you want to follow along. And Nick Carra, the director of the Centre for Digital Cultures and Societies at the University of Queensland. And you've been sharing your thoughts on this as well. A really interesting insight from a paediatric ethicist. Sharenting is a huge issue for sick children and those with a disability. This is a breach of your child's confidentiality, which you as a parent hold in trust. Anonymizing your child is impossible. The linkages are limitless and you may negatively affect your child's future. Real food for thought there.
ABCRN helps you understand the world. Find more of our stories on the ABC Listen app.